Behavioral Health Integrations podcast strives to inspire the next generation of mental health and addiction specialists. Our aim is to continue to raise awareness and encourage collaboration in the mental health and addiction industry so that it will continue to thrive. There are numerous approaches to treating mental health and substance abuse issues. On this show, we take pleasure in showcasing the diversity of these approaches used to improve the lives of others. So without further ado, your host, Jacob Minig.
Hello, everyone. Thank you again for joining me for another amazing BHI episode. Today, I have the great pleasure of having Emmeline Rosas on the show today. Emmeline is a peer support worker who uses her art expression to manage her mental health. Emmeline also facilitates workshops in the community to promote self-care and mindful practices. Emmeline is a psychedelic advocate, and on today's episode, she'll explain her process on psychedelics and what it really meant for her and her healing. And she also explains how psychedelics could possibly heal others, and as it comes to certain mental health issues like trauma, depression, and anxiety. Emmeline is also an executive manager for the Toronto Psychedelic Community. The Toronto Psychedelic Community is a volunteer-driven organization that runs events, educates, and engages with those curious and enthusiastic about psychedelics and psychedelic modalities. I, for one, cannot tell you how excited I am to have Emmeline on the show. And without further ado, let's get started. Emmeline, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, you know, when I looked at your profile and everything, I was just very interested in your experience with the psychedelics. And I'm not going to lie, I love your artwork too. Again, that may have nothing to do with your psychedelic work, but you're a very talented artist, I have to say.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So just originally, what got you into the behavioral health field? Because you currently reside in Toronto, is that correct?
I reside in Peel, which is GTA part of Toronto. Okay. Yeah, and that's where I am originally right now.
Is that where you grew up?
Actually, I was born in Peru, South America. Oh. Yeah, and I immigrated to Canada back in 1989 and been living here since. Went back a couple of times to visit, but that's about it.
Tell me, how much of a culture shock was that?
Oh my goodness. Besides the weather, the language, the community, the foods, oh my goodness, everything. It was quite a bit to assimilate to, and it took actually a few years in my childhood to get used to that, which okay. brought me to many experiences, which we will probably touch on sometime in this podcast.
Yeah. Well, okay. So imagine you're growing up, everything, you're learning a new culture, new language. Was there a particular moment where you knew you wanted to be, let's say, in the mental health, behavioral health field? Was there like a certain event or calling that inspired you to do this? What was your story?
Yeah, so I went through pretty much quite a bit of childhood trauma, not only in South America, but also here. Trying to assimilate to a culture was a very difficult start for me. And so there was a few components that really affected my mental health. As a teenager, as somebody, you know, having experiences into adulthood. When it comes to mental health and my interest, I don't think I was particularly interested in this field until I started receiving, extra help for my mental health in terms of getting involved with social workers, with an outpatient program and such things. Towards my mid-30s, okay. that's when I started to get some help, and I saw the value, I saw the healing, the transformation, and that's when I said, I want to do that too.
Now, if you don't mind me asking, your life in Peru, like, was it more like war trauma? And please tell me if I'm asking too many personal questions, but what was the dangers, if you don't?
Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely talk about that. So unfortunately, when I was a child from the ages from 3 to 11, I experienced, I was a victim of pedophilia, unfortunately. And it was a very hard time for me as I grew up in a very Catholic environment. So there was no discussion on it. Everything was pretty much repressed and held in. And it was only when I was a teenager where those things were manifesting themselves in my personality, in my mental health, how I was reacting to things emotionally. And so I did get support from like the medical field in Canada here, but it's a lot of bouncing back from one resource to another resource. There's nothing consistent. And so that makes it difficult to navigate as a human being with all this information and yet not knowing how to use it. And this is the main reason why I, you know, reached out to another modality. And that's when I found psychedelics later on in life.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so now you're in Toronto, and were you a peer recovery specialist? Is that how you originally got into this field?
I got into this field originally when I took, I went to school, to college to take the social service work program. I knew I wanted to do community work. I wasn't necessarily thinking, oh, mental health. But I think as I started helping in the community and doing social rehabilitation groups, developing psychosocial education, that's when I saw the value on learning. If we learn how our body works, but how our emotions and, you know, intelligence work as we move forward, then we can make better decisions. And that's when I decided, well, I want to do more than just, you know, plan trips and help with social rehabilitation. I want to have those difficult conversations and assist others navigating as I navigated my own health.
So when you talk about those certain reactions, you're more speaking of like fight, flight, and freeze responses to the body?
Absolutely. And also processing thoughts and as they come forward, depending on like the triggers that show up in our regular lives.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So prior to psychedelics, you saw social workers, therapists, right?
Yeah, I work with social workers, but I'm not like a registered social worker. It's a social service worker. So I do community work.
Okay.
But now I switch into peer support work, which is peer workers are people with lived experience that have navigated their own challenges that are now in a position to help others navigate other challenges.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Now, when you tried psychedelics, would you mind telling us like your story and how you first got into that?
Yes, absolutely. So when it comes to, you know, modalities to help myself, I reached out obviously to my family physician, and then I got redirected to different counseling and psychiatry and psychologists and outpatient programs. I was on medication, and I was diagnosed with many difficult, different diagnoses. So I was having an issue trying to, you know, pinpoint what was wrong. Where was the root of what was happening to me emotionally, mentally? And it was when I found out that medication was not working for me long-term. In short-term, it really did help take the edge of my anxiety and the ruminating thoughts. But when it had like a cap and it didn't go any further, that's when I started thinking, what else is out there? And that's when I turned my curiosity into finding more about psychedelics and what they do and how it is that they react with the brain and what is, because the only information that we have is basically what happened in the 60s and all that chaotic experiences in the community and society, and then boom, done, you know? So it was a long road to learning.
Well, it gets a bad name or it gets a bad rap.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's funny because I've done episodes in the past with people, and a lot of times they talk about anti-anxiety medications, antidepressants, but you have these individuals that want to start trying psychedelics. Well, they're very serious in the fact that you cannot be on any type of antidepressants when you try psychedelics. Have you heard of anything like that before?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So when I started learning about psychedelics, I started to listen to a lot of Terence McKenna. I looked into Paul Stamets, for example, a mycologist, lectures by Graham Hancock. So I started to kind of dive in some documentaries as well. I know Gabor Mate has worked with psychedelics in the past and in Western Canada. And so I knew that it required for me to kind of detoxify my body from all the pharmaceuticals that I was taking. And it took me a good 2 years to kind of stop taking medication and gradually get off my prescriptions, but also try to clear my mind in other ways. Because essentially what pharmaceuticals was for me was like a Band-Aid in a wound. right? So I was taking the edge. And so if I was taking the Band-Aid away, I needed to find modalities that were going to help me cope until I got into the psychedelics part. And so I took up medication. I did a lot of walking. I did a lot of yoga, read some books. And so I regulated myself to the point that I was ready to venture into diving with the drugs.
Wow. Wait a second. Okay. So you went 2 years without your medication. Then you started psychedelics?
That's right. Yeah.
How difficult was that? I can't imagine anyone doing that. Like, did your doctors have concern for you doing that?
Absolutely. When I talked to my family physician, he's like, I don't approve. I've never heard of that. I don't think that's a good idea. I think you should stick to your medications, seeing the history in your, you know, in your past and all that stuff. But what it was doing to me, it got to a point that the medications was making me feel like I was a zombie. Yeah. Like it was numbing the pain, but I wanted to feel that connection to my children. I wanted to feel connection to other human beings, to find the curiosity, the novelty when you see like birds in the sky. Like I was missing those little details that make up the experience of being a human being. And so I listened to my intuition and I started to educate myself and what happens, what is this, like ayahuasca. I was hearing a lot of ayahuasca conversation. And mind you, I'm from Peru. So I heard about ayahuasca, but never paid attention because we see it as a modalities that shamans use. And because I grew up in a Catholic household, there wasn't a lot of conversation about it, just very minimal. And so when I decided to do it, I found not only it was expensive and I couldn't afford it, but I did find places here in Canada that they're accessible. And they're reputable and they do assessments and everything. And so that's how I started my journey here in Ontario.
I feel like Canada's way ahead of the game compared to the United States when it comes to psychedelic therapy. They really are. They just are. Where now, is it like fully legal in all areas of Canada, like psychedelic therapy?
No, absolutely not. It is not legal yet. It's only legal based on exemption applications. And so there are many organizations that are working to find exemptions for patients, for example, who are in the end of life process. Okay. Right. And so they're working on applying for that. And mind you, the government sometimes says no, and they don't approve. So it's a constant battle. But we're seeing that there are changes happening in the US and eventually trickles down here over to Canada as well. So we're very positive. The community is very positive. There's been ample time for more data collection in terms of studies as well. And so there's like tangible evidence that this is good. Yeah. And so this actually helps.
Now, would you recommend a lot of people to get off their antidepressants or anxiety medications for the length that you did? Or is there a particular time do you think that it would be okay to, let's say, maybe go 3 months, 6 months, and then you could try psychedelics?
I think it's really based on the types of medication one is taking, but also in the experience and the support that's around a person. You know, if it's a person that has very mild anxiety and taking medication and they have support systems and they have like hobbies, they maybe take a less time than somebody who's a little bit more isolated, doesn't have many communication with too many people, and it's on heavy track of many different medications that have, you know, heavy amounts. I would say then it's a very personal journey, but even though my family physician was not on board, I would always say just consult, because like one of the things about psychedelics, it does tend to raise your heart rate, and maybe sometimes your blood pressure causes you to be sick. And so if somebody is coming in to participate in plant medicine ceremonies and they have issues with their heart, I think it would be a best idea to consult with a medical professional before jumping into the experience.
Now, was ayahuasca your first, use of psychedelics?
No, actually, when I was younger, in my late teens, I did try psilocybin, so what we call magic mushrooms. Yep. I did it for fun. There wasn't anything therapeutic about it. I've also tried LSD. And this was just more to have a social experience.
Okay.
And I didn't take them in larger doses, but my first intense, therapeutic psychedelic experience was with ayahuasca. And it was 4 nights. Yeah.
Do you agree though? Yeah. Like you said, it has a lot to do with your intentions prior to using the drug too. Where at first you were just using them to have like a good time, but when it got to the ayahuasca, you were looking for more of a therapeutic perspective, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I really don't see anything wrong in using it for social, you know, occasions and fun, as opposed to a therapeutic kind of setting. However, wherever it is used, it's important to have a plan. You know, if you're going to have fun with your friends, are you going to be at a safe place? Are you going to have people that you trust around you?
Yeah.
Are you going to have a plan if anything goes wrong? Things like that. Because there are many young kids that I see with the psychedelic renaissance. They're not necessarily aware of the safety and the repercussions. And they, you know, so it's important to educate. And so right now I am working with the Toronto Psychedelic Community, who is a wonderful organization focused in bringing this type of education in form of events to the community. So we can, you know, jump on board with the Renaissance, but be well informed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I have to ask you, when you took ayahuasca, can you explain to us like the process you went about? Like when you took it, were you also like working with a therapist at the same time? Or did you just take it like at your house? How did that process go about?
Yeah, I signed up to this. So this was a psychotherapist who's had his own ayahuasca practice. He trained for about 10 years with shamans in Peru in order to do this. There was a whole process of like assessment, any medications, why are you, you know, do you have an education? How much do you know? So I ended up being in a room full of people that were actually prepared and educated in this matter. And when I did it, it was a process of 4 nights. And so we had, you know, sharing circles where we communicated our intentions. Then we talked about our experiences. We were encouraged to journal and to self-care after the retreat. And so my self-care was keeping in touch with my therapist mm-hmm. and engaging in art therapy, as well as other modalities. But my main focus to integrate my experiences was my therapist and art. Because in essence, when you take something as strong as ayahuasca, what it does is dissolves your sense of self. So everything that you know about yourself, it's like an explosion. It's you're like fragmented everywhere. And so when you come back from the experience, it is up to you to grab those fragments that you have seen and put them together for them to make sense, to get to the root of maybe the things that are causing you issues in your everyday life.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'll listen to like podcasts like Joe Rogan and other people talk about their experiences. And even though like they say, like they would have like a, like somewhat of a scary negative experience, when they come down, they still find some positives in it. Like there's a reason maybe you had some fear in those moments or excitement. And it's up to you, like you said, to make sense of it and to grab those pieces. And at the end, they always kind of feel better about themselves, even though, again, it was somewhat of a scary trip.
Yeah, that's why I love the quote, a bad trip is actually a good trip, because there's so much wisdom to learn from. Like one thing is being connected to everything, to plants, to humans, to mm-hmm. kind of experience that consciousness and awareness that is beyond what the human capabilities are when we're not in any substance. It's such a beautiful feeling. But with the same intensity, you can go to the other side, which is that intense terror and in trauma and just mm-hmm. fear. And so sometimes there was this situation where I would be feeling fear, horror, love, and shame and sadness at the same time.
Oh, I can't imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is why it's important when it comes to ayahuasca specifically, because it's a plant medicine that is not only a couple hours, it might last 4 to 6 hours. It's important to be prepared and to be ready to dive deep into the subconscious in order to start healing mm-hmm. whatever is stuck in there and just preventing us from living the life that we want to live in terms of when we know better, we do better kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I've even heard that people say during their experience that they would also think about like the past and people that have done harm to them, or if, let's say in a traumatic situation, they said horrible, mean things to them. But you, during this trip, gained such an understanding of, yes, they did this, but you have a better understanding of why they did that. And you're more accepting of mm-hmm. them. even though they were the bully or the, you know, abuser.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that people tell you when you have been through like abuse in your trauma experience is that part of healing is forgiving the perpetrators and things like that. And I can tell you right now, you know, I'm in my mid-40s. I haven't forgiven the perpetrators because it's too intense for me to do that. What I have done is I have forgiven myself. I have let go of the shame and understood that they chose the path because their conditioning put them there with the environmental awareness that they had, with the society awareness that they had. And I do not blame them for anything. I just put it aside and I let it go. And now my growth is indicative of my strength. And that's what I hang on to. And that's what I love. And that's what drives me forward every day.
So what you're trying to tell me is that throughout some time you blamed yourself maybe for the incident rather than the person, or am I misunderstanding?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So when anybody who goes is a victim of any type of abuse, physical, sexual, psychological, mm-hmm. there is a sense of shame for having allowed those things to happen. It doesn't matter what age is. Yeah. And shame can be so critical and it can be so devastating to the mind and the body. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because again, a lot of times people get like shame and guilt mixed up. And it's very common. But again, what I've been taught is like shame is about what you put on yourself and what kind of human being you think you are, where guilt is more based on like the actions that you have done to other people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And but it's so, and I'm not saying that feeling guilt and shame is a bad thing. It's okay to feel shame. Let's say maybe I behaved in a way that it wasn't, you know, the best, and I can feel shame for that brief moment, but what can I do to improve myself so I don't repeat that again and learn from that? Same with guilt. You know, guilt is part of, for example, setting boundaries, right? So if I set a boundary with a person, I'm going to feel guilty for saying no. I can't be there for you, or I cannot do this for you. And so guilt and shame are part of normal human emotions, just like joy and anger and happiness. But the degree of how we feel them is what we have to be aware of, because it does affect us mentally and emotionally.
Yeah. Well, and I love the fact that you kind of brought up a cycle where you could feel like really horrible about something that you've done. And I've been guilty of this, and you feel bad and guilty about whatever and your remorse. But then yet you do the same thing, let's say 3 months later, you know, and it's like, I feel like at times the difference between like a good person, and a bad person, or someone who's trying to be good, is that you just do the best to learn from your mistakes. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, it's not enough just in a way to like feel bad, but like, hey, let's try to learn from it, learn why you did this so you don't do it again. Because again, feeling like bad and guilty is just not enough, you know.
Yeah. I think we're always evolving, you know. You know, what we knew 5 years ago, we're probably in 5 years from now, we're going to know even better. It's a process of evolution, kind of like a seed grows, a tree grows, an animal grows. It's, and we're all headed to the same destination, you know. So coming to peace with impermanence and knowing that one day we're not going to be here anymore allows us to pay attention and be present more every day of our lives. Yeah.
Because like when you go through your experience, do you have any thoughts or emotions towards like what some people call the afterlife? Mm-hmm. Like, does that ever happen to people? I think that would happen to me if I ever did.
Oh yeah. You get a sense of once our bodies are done, you know, our vessels are stop working. It's not just, it's not like we just go poof, that's it. I feel like, and I was like a really devout atheist in the past, you know, many years ago. And I think what psychedelics did was open up my consciousness to possibilities that there's more after we're done here. Yes. What that looks like, I don't know, but I feel intuitively in my whole being that this is just temporary, this life in this physical body, and there's more after that.
I have such a strong passion for this while I'll be doing like, listening to like research podcasts on afterlife or videos. And I tend to believe a lot of them. Again, these so-called mediums, mm-hmm. where they feel like, again, we are spirit and there's like particular dimensions, right? Mm-hmm. And Earth is more of actually a school. So it's called like Earth School, where our spirits will choose to, again, go into these bodies to, again, learn life lessons so they can, again, ascend to a higher dimension. Again, just rumors, but these are just thoughts and ideas that are out there regarding like who we are as human beings.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much information that we can tap to that we don't understand, and therefore we deem it as like that's just mumbo jumbo because we don't get it. But there is a type of psychic connection that we have with one another, you know, kind of like if you have a partner and you've been together for a long time, you finish each other's sentences, you know when they're going to call, when they're going to text. Sometimes there's just that connection. That same connection we can develop not only with our loved ones but with other people if we hone it, if we practice, if we're in tune with it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would love for you to talk to us more about, again, the Toronto psychedelic community. I know you talked a little bit about before, but what is your position with the organization?
So right now I'm part of the executive management team. Mm-hmm. And so the Toronto psychedelic community is a volunteer-led organization. We all met through volunteering for another organization. We just met with the same passion and the same interest to actually want more, specifically after COVID, after being isolated for a long time, not being able to see people, you know, in person. And so we had conversations regarding what would it look like to create a community when we actually connect with authenticity to support and normalize the use of psychedelics, but also promote education. And so that's how the Toronto psychedelic community came about. We started with a wonderful picnic, a family picnic that took place in June of this year. We saw, you know, families, children, aunts, uncle, pets. It was just wonderful. Wow. And it was an opportunity to actually normalize that psychedelics have been part of our healing process. And it has made us better people, more connected to ourselves, to our families, to society, and the goodness that it brings. Mm-hmm. And so we want to bring this atmosphere, this vibe to everybody that we can, that is interested in joining and learning more and in finding connection. As I said, specifically with after COVID, I know I mentioned, for example, Gabor Mate before, and he talks about the dangers of isolation. Yeah. And so, you know, it's lack of connection to community and it's lack of having something purposeful to do and just staying isolated. And so with the Toronto psychedelic community, not only do we offer these opportunities for people, but it allows people to get passionate about something that they really love, that they really worked for them. And there's many ways, you know, not just events. And so we are opening the opportunity for webinars, educational webinars, and such things. Yeah.
Well, and like we mentioned before, it's just so sad how we're not farther along in this. And again, you have the whole 1960s type here where it kind of put like a bad picture on it. Again, the drug use and whatnot. But do you think there's any other things that like cause barriers to, I guess, the research or being where it should be in the field of like mental health and addiction?
Yeah, I think what the barriers are, not the professionals not paying attention to the data collection, but also the lack of education. So as I mentioned, I heard not long ago, actually, somebody who tried psychedelics in the woods on their own and got into an accident, and things like that. And so, you know, of course, you want to connect with nature and have psychedelics. But if you're going to be on your own, maybe a microdose is a good idea, not a whole, you know, dose where you're going to put yourself in danger. And so one of the things that we promote is set and setting an education, whether you're going to do it on your own, whether you're going to do it in groups. And so everybody in our team, but also in our community, are very open to hearing this and are very aware of the dangers. Right. And so that's what we're trying to expand to reach out to whoever wants to learn.
Can you give my listeners like an example of microdosing in that situation? Is that like a gummy or is it just a lesser dose of a psychedelic or whatnot? What is that like?
Yeah. So a good resource for microdosing, I suggest Paul Stamets, who is a very popular mycologist. Fun fact, there's a Star Trek character named after him. I'm not a fan of Star Trek. I don't watch it, but I heard that. But he has really, really good information regarding microdosing. And so microdosing, you can actually buy it online. It's accessible. There's, you know, companies that sell them. And so there's different kinds of ways that you can take them. You can take them every 2 days. And I think, or you can take them every 3 days. I'm not sure exactly the modalities that people use, but when I have microdose, I have taken them every 2 days in the prescription description on the bottle. Like it'll tell you whenever you buy it. And so I've only microdosed a couple of times. Like, and when I say a couple of times, like finished two different bottles, right? Okay. I'm not currently microdosing because I'm trying lion's mane at the moment, which is not a psychedelic, but it's a mushroom that helps with cognitive functions. Okay. And so I would suggest, because I'm not the best to ask about microdosing, but I would suggest to inform oneself by looking at people that are professionals that know about it, and looking at not the prescription, but the bottle's content and how much to take.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that sublingually, like underneath the tongue for the most part?
So the way I've taken microdose, I mean, you can buy a chocolate, you can buy a gummy, but I've taken it in pill form. Okay. And so it's grounded up in pill form. And I know for myself, if it has enhanced my focus, right?
Good.
And so it's been really, really helpful. But it's something that I don't gravitate and stick with. Like, as I said, I tried it, I see the benefits, and now I want to try something else. I'm a little bit curious, so I like to know all kinds of modalities that I can learn from. Yeah.
You know, like another thought too came to me about how egos can get in the way of like therapeutic modalities. And right now, on the top of my head, I'm thinking like treatment centers, right? And again, I'm not sure what it's like in Canada, but I've actually heard of a lot of research saying psychedelics actually helps with drug and alcohol addictions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So I haven't tried, for example, Iboga, right? Ibogaine. So I heard that there's a documentary called, I believe it's Dosed, right? Okay. And it goes through a journey of somebody who's struggling with substances addiction, and the journey of like taking this Iboga medication or plant medicine and navigating through the process of a lot of discomfort, and then the person coming at the other side explaining their healing process. So it's similar to, for example, ayahuasca. When I was diagnosed with complex PTSD, I thought that I would have that I thought that maybe my diagnosis would define me for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
But in taking ayahuasca, I knew in that process of integration that I could actually overcome a lot of the darkness that I brought into my life and not let it run my life. So I don't consider myself, I'm a person suffering with complex PTSD. I can, you know, now be aware of triggers and manage them better. But in terms of healing, I sometimes don't feel like I don't have it anymore, you know, and that's how the healing process has been for me.
And have you ever had like terrors or nightmares or flashbacks? And if so, has it also minimized that as well?
Yeah. So, and that's a funny thing, because I was talking to my therapist about it. I do still experience dreams.
Okay.
So for example, you know, I would experience a nightmare that had to do with me as a child. And, you know, I wake up and I'm in a state of like sadness. I'm in a state of like, oh, you know, this feels heavy. And so I can have the awareness that this is the consequence of my dream. I can sit down and process and meditate and breathe a little bit. And throughout my day, by the time an hour passes, I'm already done. I'm already moving to the next step. Whereas if this was to happen like 10 years ago, that would have affected me the whole day and possibly the whole week.
Yeah.
So, and this is what, in terms of management, what psychedelics does is it grabs all your trauma. It puts it right in your face so you can see exactly what it is that is affecting you in like basically scratching your mind all the time. And so, you know, when that happens, you know that you can look at it, sit with it, but put it away because it's no longer with you.
That is so hard for a lot of clients to actually do in therapy without the psychedelics. Like that is the main thing as therapists when we work with trauma with clients is, again, when we work with them, we want to make sure how in tune are they with their bodies. And if they're not in tuned, then we don't jump into the trauma right away. We get them to do like meditation, like DBT work. Yoga is really helpful to again work on those mindfulness skills so they get that increased attunement. So when they talk about traumatic experiences, they're not into that, again, that fight, flight, or freeze mode.
Yeah.
Because when you get in those modes, you can't really listen or hear to anybody because, again, you're in that kind of like that flashback mode.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I thought, for example, in my healing process, just to put myself in as an example, I thought that I had to gravitate to something. Maybe a therapist can help me. Maybe a modality can help me. Maybe this book on self-help can help me, yep. You know? And I realized that the safest place that I could go to was me. I was the safest place. But the reason that I didn't feel safe because my mind was always ruminating about the past, ruminating about the future. And I was not comfortable sitting with myself in all those narratives happening all at once. It was my mind became an unsafe place to be. And so that was the heightening of my anxiety, the heightening of my depression. But when I realized that I can find stillness and quiet in my own mind, whatever chaos was happening externally, I can retreat in my body and sit with it and be okay. But that didn't happen, you know, from one day to the next. It was a constant process of using practices, collecting tools that work for me. And so, it, you know, maybe a couple of tools that work for me may not work for the next person, but it's about trying different things and being curious about what else is out there.
No, that's so important because in my past episodes with people, they would give me great advice on, okay, if you're going to try psychedelics, and again, this is more advice to the community, culture. Mm-hmm. It's not a one time you take it and it fixes everything.
No.
It helps, but you got to have good self-care. You got to still exercise, eat healthy, go to therapy. You still need to do all these things. Just because you take one dose or one session, it's not going to cure you for the rest of your lives. And that's something that people really need to be aware of.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it's important for people to know that psychedelics does not fix the problems. It shows you what the problems are. Mm. And then you can grab them and essentially start to heal them one by one.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a great tool of revelation for maybe hit what's to reveal what's hidden in the subconscious that we're not necessarily aware of. And it shows us in different, you know, so when psychedelics happen, there's that psychoactive plants, hallucinations happening and everything. And so even though it sounds a little bit out there, it is a great opportunity to sit with those visions as they're coming up, feeling all those feelings, because you're able to feel them not like if you were feeling them at any moment in time where you're being present in your body. It's like when you are taking a plant medicine, your sense of self is looking at it from outside the box. You're not in it with it. You're outside. So you have such compassion for what's happening in that moment, whether you're scared at the same time or whether you're loving yourself at the same time, but you're able to see it from outside. And so there's that connection that happens. Yeah.
So is it compassion for you as well as maybe the perpetrator or the people around in that event?
Yeah, I think when compassion comes forward is compassion for everything, for all, you know, for every human being that stepped on this planet, for everything that made up the universe and where the universe is going. It's that unified compassion of all that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like when you think about it, when you're not under any psychedelics, that's like it almost doesn't compute in the mind to have that much heart. But when you're in, you know, in the process of feeling the medicine, it's like your heart and your mind open up in such extreme vulnerability. Yeah. All you can do is take it in, be scared, or you cry and just go with emotions. And there's no drug that, you know, you can say, okay, I'm done with my trip. Help me, I want to stop. There's none of that. So you are basically, once you're in for the ride until the end.
Wow. That's such a beautiful thing. And I can imagine it being very tough for people because again, when they go through those traumatic experiences, there's like certain emotions like fear, anxiety, or more importantly, anger. I can imagine being anger and aggression being so critical to that. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, no, I don't want to have empathy for you. You are my perpetrator.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Screw you. Like that's how maybe the self prior to the psychedelics is feeling.
Absolutely. And if I may share an experience under ayahuasca, so when it comes to, for example, fear and anger, at one point during an ayahuasca experience, I find myself curled up in a ball and I was sweating and I was crying profusely. And I don't know how long I was there, but it felt like hours. And it got to a point where I could not get out of it. And so I called the shaman and I said, I need help. And so what the shaman did is he helped me kind of catch my breath and, you know, breathe not so shallow as I was doing it. He asked me to tell him what was happening. And then he brought me to another shaman. And so I was sitting in front of a shaman and she said to me, what's going on? And I said, there's this really dark demon that's trying to pull me into hell. He's screaming in my ear. I'm hearing all these screams from all these people that have gone to hell already. And he's scaring me that he's going to take me, but he keeps on taunting me. Like he's, I'm coming to get you. And I'm afraid I don't want to go. And I said, at the same time, I don't want to react in an aggressive way, but because that's not the nature of ayahuasca. That's not the nature of the plant. And I said, I know they call it Mother Ayahuasca in the ceremony. I said, Mother Ayahuasca is kind, it's loving, and I don't want to do the opposite.
Yeah.
Right. And so what the shaman told me is that she said to me, ask Mother Ayahuasca what she wants you to do in this situation. Talk to her, talk to the plant medicine. It's in your body. It's in you. And so I started to reflect on it. And I said, I want to be mean to this demon that's taunting me, but I'm afraid to come out and be just forceful and aggressive. And the message that I got, which it almost feels like a download in that moment, what I got was, Emmalyn, there's no demon bigger than you. And so what I did in that moment in my vision, I turned into this red demon looking dragon. And the demon that was taunted me shrunk in size, put his tails between his legs like a dog, and took off.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, I felt the strength pouring over me. And I realized in that moment that the message was, there's no demon bigger than me in terms of, I can overcome anything, but I can also be my worst enemy.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and that was a duality of that message. And that I've applied that message in every facet of my experiences. I continue to carry it. And this is what I mean when it comes to like anger and fear and hurt and pain. That's the message that I got that helped me integrate my own experiences. Yeah.
Oh, I can't. That's such a beautiful experience. And again, I'm sure. Yeah. Like you just said, you take that mentality for future challenges you face in life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's honestly a powerful lifelong message. That's.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I'm able to integrate it in a way that fits my lifestyle because never in my life had I experienced such deep, vulnerable, intense emotions. You know, I felt anger, I felt fear, but that intensified fear, that intensified anger, that was what I got, like the juice of what intense anger and fear is like. And so I can sit with it now because it's never going to be that intense in real life. It's so small now that I can go, oop, I'm going to not let that affect my life because I've been through worse, you know?
Yeah. So switching directions, please tell me more about your artwork. I know I kind of mentioned this before, but does it have a lot to do with your psychedelic experiences or is it more just of a hobby?
Well, if you look at some of my really past posts and in Instagram, so I started drawing to kind of, you know, deal with my emotions and put it on paper. Because sometimes I didn't know how to make sense of them. I was just feeling very overwhelmed. And so I would grab a piece of paper and then I would draw. So if you look at it, a lot of the beginning of my work is very dark. And I was very much into dark art. And once I started with my healing journey with psychedelics, there was a transformation in my art. You could see more colors. You could see more connection to animals, to plants, to myself. And there's also that element of darkness because that's part of my personality. You know, I like horror movies and things like that. And so, it's been a transformative experience to kind of evolve not only as a person in my mind, in my spirit, but also in my creation. And I love doing it. I love sharing it. My kids are very much into it as well. And so, I just finding a very, very healing to express.
And don't you have your own art website too on your Instagram page? Is that true?
My art, I used to have an art website because I used to kind of do community art groups.
Okay.
But because right now I'm with the Toronto psychedelic community and I also work full time, mm-hmm. I am more dedicated to giving my attention to the psychedelic community right now, mm-hmm. and essentially maybe bringing up groups that have to do with art therapy. But that's kind of like in the future plans. For now, we're looking more into like community and connection and having fun and enjoying ourselves and talking about psychedelics, as because it's very normal and it's becoming a renaissance right now. So, yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Definitely. Well,
actually, as we wind out, that's what I was actually going to ask you is, what are your future goals in this field? Let's say if like you can go in the 5 years in the future, what do you still hope to accomplish? Do you have like more organizations to work for, more projects to work on? What are your plans?
My plans is I want to see a future where peer support and psychedelics merge. So right now in the mental health field here in Canada, there's a lot of psychotherapy, there's psychiatrists, there's counselors, there's peer supports. But unfortunately, the waiting periods for therapy could be a year plus. Yeah. And in the meantime, what are people accessing? Yeah. So there's peer support, but they don't have to do anything to do with psychedelics. So you can go to peer support groups and learn tools and psychosocial education and things like that. But there's nothing for people who are integrating their experiences after sitting with psychedelics. And that is a different type of peer support because it's acknowledging maybe what you saw, the visuals, maybe it's acknowledging some of the terror that you experienced that you want to share. Like if you were to share that in a normal peer support group, that would be like, what's wrong with you, right? Yes. So it's important. So I want to see a future where peer support and psychedelics merge. So there is that process of healing where we can hold the community's hand and normalize that this is the process of, you know, healing the pain, healing whatever is, you know, impeding us from progress as a human being. And so I would like to see that in the future.
Me as well. I really would. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say it's been such an honor and pleasure having you on the show. Now, I have to ask you, if my listeners want to get a hold of you, is there a particular phone number or website they could use to shoot you a message?
Actually, yeah. So I know my Instagram handle is at Emily K, but the best place to, I guess, get an access to more psychedelic information, what is happening in the community, but also for those who are outside Canada and want to connect and possibly attend educational webinars, I urge you to follow the Toronto Psychedelic Community .ca and check it out and see what we're up to. And there's also info@torontopsychedelic.ca. And you can send us an email with any questions that you might have and we can give you more information.
That's awesome. And tell my listeners, I will make sure I put those links on the show notes so you have access to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, again, Emily, thank you so much for being on the show. It was a true honor and pleasure.
Thank you, Jacob. Thank you for having me here.
I just want to thank Emlyn and all of my listeners for another awesome and amazing BHI episode. I just want to inform everyone that the content expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a medical doctor or a licensed mental health professional. All right, everyone, until next time, have a good day. Bye.